This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
So let's get started. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Bismillah wa alhamdulillah. Wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah. So today we're going to go through what the recommended acts are of the prayer. To do a quick recap, we talked about the fara'id. We've been looking at this text. If you remember way back when, I recommended people to get a copy of it, the Ascent to Felicity text. It goes through the conditions, and we went through the obligations of the prayer and the mandatory acts of the prayer. And now we're on the emphasized sunnahs. So in the text, it gives us like a partial list of what are the recommended. So here on this site, it gives a more full list. So it has all of the things that we still discussed, the fara'id, what are obligatory. So these are the things as you're learning to pray, right? Someone converts to Islam, it's now mandatory for them to observe like prayers regularly. And so, not in general, but you're working towards the fullest form of prayer, which are all the obligations, the necessary, and the recommended acts. But you're starting still with what are the obligatory, the fara'id. And so we discussed that in detail. And then in the Hanafi school, you have the necessary acts. So the obligatory acts that we talked about were like the skeleton of the prayer, and the necessary acts are the acts that are adding now kind of the flesh to the skeleton. And we're going to go through the recommended acts, which are now what are beautifying kind of the prayer. And this is stuff that likely if you've ever seen somebody pray, you've prayed yourself, like you do a lot of these, their postures to them, they're kind of mechanics. And there's some additional things that you're going to say in Arabic. But if you recall what we had said last week, you want to focus on what is in the necessary acts. If you've learned what's in the recommended, that's fine. You should add those in. But if you haven't already, learning the first chapter, Surah Fatiha, which we went through last week, we looked at two short chapters of the Quran, Surah Kawthar and Surah Ikhlas. So, you know, trying to memorize those. We spent a good amount of time talking about the tashahud, the attayyatu lillahi wa salawatu wa tayyibat, for people who remember that, if you're here in person or watching on the live stream. So these are like the necessary things that you want to kind of engage and learn those. And then moving on to the recommended, the sunnah acts. Does that make sense? Everybody following kind of where we're at, right? The idea isn't that on day one, everybody has to know all of the recommended acts and the necessary acts and the obligatory acts. Because to convert to Islam doesn't mean that you have to have a prerequisite course of study. Like there is literally companions of the Prophet who converted to Islam. And after they converted, they partook in a battle. And in the battle, they died in the battle. And they never prayed a prayer in their whole life as a Muslim. But they were still Muslim. Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? So the acceptance of Islam is not conditional upon knowing like the rituals and practices of Islam. And then once somebody decides to become Muslim, or they might have been born into a Muslim family and they've learned Islam or kind of embraced it at a later time, you still have to kind of go at a pace that makes sense. As you're learning it, you want to go through it in this mode that we've been talking about. And so we're going to go through the last part today, the recommended acts. And this is a long list of things, but some of it is going to be stuff that like you're already either accustomed to seeing someone do, or you build like a quick relationship with because it's got postures to it. It's just like mechanics. It's not really like recitation of words. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. So all of the things that we talked about already, this is like building upon it now, right? The way you want to literally conceptualize a skeleton, and then on top of the skeleton, the fara'id, the obligatory, we added the flesh, the wajibat, the necessary acts, and now we're adding the recommended acts, like what ornaments and beautifies the prayer in and of itself. So the first of the recommended acts is that you're going to stand straight without moving one's head when saying the first takbir. So what this is in reference to, if you remember, we had like the conditions for the prayer, right? This was outside of the prayer, what needs to happen. You gotta be in a state of wudu and the time of the prayer has to come. People remember those six conditions that we talked about. One of them was facing towards Mecca, right? Facing in the direction of the Kaaba in Mecca. So this is assuming that you're doing that now, right? So if in this room, the direction of Mecca is this way, right? But for the purposes of just demonstration, you don't have to face that way. What is happening is you are orienting your entire body in the direction of Mecca and standing straight without moving one's head when saying the first takbir. So you're in this like upright standing position, getting ready for the prayer. And then you're going to raise one's hand parallel to one's ears. This is something that as you are in this place of the takbir, that's when the Allahu Akbar is happening, right? So you'll see different people do this in different ways. In the Hanafi school, the hands are coming parallel to one's ears. And this is after intention has been made, right? So it's not, as I'm putting my hands up, I'm making an intention. Like you're intending the act. And as the takbir comes, you're raising your hands, Allahu Akbar, and you're entering into the prayer. Does that make sense? Okay. To face the palm and fingers of one's hands towards the Qibla. The Qibla is the direction of prayer, facing Mecca towards the Kaaba. So all of your body is oriented in the direction of that. So when you're raising your hands, palms and fingers are also facing, right? So it's not like I put my hands up like this, do you know, or like I'm cupping them in some way. Like everything is facing in the direction of the Kaaba. Why is this like particular? Not because the rules are just in a vacuum. I literally sat down with a woman earlier today who is considering converting to Islam. And she said, all these Muslims I talk to, I'm trying to learn about religion and they just keep giving me rules, right? And I said, that is like the best thing I've ever heard in my life. Because that's what the experience is for a lot of people as they're learning about Islam. People just give them like rules and it stops being about God. So this is a spiritual exercise. And you want to think about it as an exercise similar to physical exercise, right? If any of you do any type of physical exercising, which you should, you don't have to go nuts with it, but just regularly, you are exercising your body in whichever which way you like to do. Or think about any point in time in your life where you were exercising. You're in middle school and they make you exercise and you're miserable about it, but there's still like a form to what you're doing. And if you don't follow the form, it's not that the gain might not be there, but if it's not done in the way that it's supposed to be done, you're not gonna get the maximum potential you could. And in some instances, you might actually hurt yourself, right? If you're doing something wrong. And so here, you want to understand the mechanics as they're linked to spiritual ascension, right? This is kind of the form of the prayer that you have not a paranoia about, but a meticulousness so that it's still rendering consciousness, because it's super easy, right? I'm 40 years old, you know what I mean? I was born in a Muslim family where I've been praying for a long period of time. It's super easy when the mechanics become instinctive for you to just start getting lazy with it and lax with it. You know, you're not standing there in a way that it's like, I'm half asleep, it's Fajr time, just throw like something up in the air, I'm doing things. You're very deliberate to create consciousness and you're orienting your entire body in the direction of prayer so that it's rendering now in this form, like what will yield the highest potential of inward transformation. That's the goal of the spiritual exercise, to impact inward, right? Because when you're praying, you can't compel God, right? That's not the point of the prayer, to change God. The prayer itself doesn't change. The mechanics, they're the same throughout every time we pray it. So it's meant to inculcate change within the practitioner of the prayer. And in order to do that, you got to follow the mechanics. How do you get stronger? By doing it with consistency. That's why there's 5 times in a day that you're doing this thing. So somebody takes one jog and doesn't run again for the next 20 years of their life, and then they try to jog and they can't move. Well, it's because you did it once in 20 years, right? Even if you did it once in a month or once in a year, it's going to be based off of what you're putting into it. So the consistency of it, getting used to the form and the mechanics, and then as the mechanics become more kind of concise, you start to elevate in the yield of what the exercise intends. Do you get what I mean? So somebody tells you, well, this is just how we do it. That's not how it works. Do you know? There's a reason why we do it this way. And the reason is that in Islam, the understanding is that God is telling us the best way to worship Him, and that the purpose of that worship is to be able to build that inward contentment, that inward balance. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Yeah.
So you're going to face the palm and the fingers of your hands towards Mecca. If you have some kind of physical reason as to why these things are not possible, it's the exception to the rule. You don't force yourself to do. This is why we said, for example, in the obligatory acts of an obligatory prayer, is you have to stand in the prayer if you have the ability to stand. If someone cannot stand, they don't force themselves to somehow stand. They just do what they have the physical capacity to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Further direction, let's just say if we're using, sometimes the phone Qiblas are always showing different directions. If we do it according to that, but it's not accurate, is that acceptable?
Yeah, because the only time you got to be head on is when you're standing in front of the Kaaba, right? If you're in Mecca and it's right in front of you and you're still praying the wrong direction, then there's something off. You know what I mean? Right? But with reasonable understanding, when you go in different parts of the world, you're going to have a potential for it to be a little bit off. What you want to acquaint yourself with is also the sun, right? So the sun is setting west, which is here, right? If we know that west is there, and that means then east is this way, right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, the answer is yes, yes.
Yeah.
Right? So there's west and east. So it means north is this direction. And so northeast is going to be here, right? So if you came in here and you saw somebody praying that way and their compass said, I'm going to pray that way, just by virtue of the sun, that's not possibly northeast. Do you know what I mean? That's why you don't want to just confine yourself to a technological apparatus, because there's a big part of this that teaches us to have an elemental relationship with the environment around us, right? Look at the sun. Learn how to do some of these things. We're going to New Mexico next week on a retreat that I'm leading with Sheikh Daoud Yassin. We're going to be out in nature a lot. And these are some of the things we're going to try to help people see, right? But you could do it yourself too. Go stand in the middle of the park and just look at the sun at the time that you were praying and be oh, that's what it looks like when it's dhuhr time, right? Look at your shadow, because this is what things are based off of, the length of one's shadow in relation to the cycle of the sun. And so that's what it means. When it says your shadow is 1 times its length, 2 times its length for the third prayer of the day, the Asr prayer. Do you get what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Okay. When raising the hands for the takbir, to leave one's fingers as they are without spreading them apart or joining them together, just bringing your hands up, right? In whatever kind of natural format, you bring them in. For a man to place the right hand over the left hand below one's navel by placing the palm of his hand, of his right hand over the back of his left hand, clasping the wrists with the pinky finger and thumb. So we talked about this previously, but in some opinions, there's no distinction between the form of a man's prayer and a woman's prayer. And in some opinions, that a woman's prayer is slightly different, more out of a sense of optimality rooted in just the surroundings around you, right? So, for example, like if we were praying in the park, for a man, you are going to bow in such a way where you're kind of standing, your back is flat, etc. But bowing by definition is that you lower yourself enough that your hands can touch your knees. And so the concern, if a woman is in the middle of a public place and she's going through all these motions in that mode, it sets her up for a potentially unsafe situation, right? And so there's more of a sense of, well, how are you protecting yourself in some of these postures? So that's where some of these distinctions are made, and there's different opinions on it, but does that make sense, right? And there's people who ask these questions too, like, you know, if I'm praying alone, because you have to pray the prayer in Islam in the window of time that the prayer is supposed to be prayed in. And that means, like, if you're outside and it's time to pray, unless there's, like, definitive understanding that this is going to be detrimental to you and, like, your life, like, there's physical danger, that's different. But you're kind of understanding the way that all of this works is not devoid of reality. You know, like, you're in a place where you're still kind of aware of your surroundings. So here, what it's saying is that the position that you would put your hands in is below your belly button. These three fingers are resting on the top of your left arm, and your pinky and your thumb are clasping the arm. Does it make sense? Right? And there's a lot of people that you're going to see that their hands are in different positions when they pray. You can put your hands to your side. You'll have some people who have their hands kind of across their chest, right? There's not like a designated only way to do this, you know? So in the Hanafi school, this is what the recommendations are. You keep your feet 4 fingers apart. So what does that mean, right? Like, you know, I'm standing up.
I'm not gonna fall. Oh my God.
You know, I'm not, like, in a place where my legs are this spread apart. You know what I'm saying? You're not, like, it's no man spreading in your prayer, you know? Like, you're in a place where your body's comfortable. It's not in a place of, like, restriction. It's going to be varied from person to person because we have difficult physical stature, do you know? But the idea is that you are at a comfortable distance, right? Kind of shoulder width at as best as you can. And so you're going to have like a little bit of distance between your feet. Does it make sense? Yeah. Now, before you recite the Fatiha, there is a recitation that we'll try to either get to this week or next week. It's called the Thana. This is a recommended recitation, the Thana, that you're going to recite in that first unit of prayer. That is just an invocation, a glorification of God. After that, you recite what is called the ta'awudh in Arabic. Some of you have probably heard that before. It says, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim." Right? I seek refuge with Allah from Satan the accursed. And it's something that you're reciting just to yourself, like silently. You don't have to say it out loud. Yeah. Does anybody have any questions so far? Because we're going to go through like 30 of these in the recommended part. Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to, for the men, put your hands underneath your navel. And for the women, it's going to be more underneath kind of your chest area, protecting your chest. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on any of what we went through so far?
Would you mind doing that on the chair so that
Yeah, I'll do it again. Any other questions people have? Yeah, go ahead.
For the parts that are in Arabic, can you write them on the board?
Yeah. We'll go through the remaining parts. And if you missed any of the sessions before, where we went through in the other sections, the Arabic, they're all on the podcast and on the YouTube channel. And I'm happy to meet with people one-on-one to go through it also, any of that. But just so people are aware, again, If you're just like learning it, you're connecting to it, in the obligatory parts of the prayer. Wow, this entire crew just walked in here. What a cool group of guys. Look at that. Hug yourself. Here are the obligatory acts, right? And then the text we were looking at. You have the integrals of it and what the minimum Arabic you're going to be reciting is just any recitation of the Quran, even if only one verse, in any two cycles of the obligatory prayer, in all of the cycles of the witr and voluntary prayers, unless one is a follower in a congregation, etc., right? So what we were saying was like the shortest verse of the Quran says thumma nadhir, and then he looked. You just have to recite that in Arabic at a minimum as you're learning these other things outside of the prayer. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I was just thinking, like, if you speak Arabic but you're not really good at reading phonetic transcriptions, it would be helpful.
Yeah, so what we've been doing is putting up on the board the Arabic, the transliteration, and the language, the translation of it, and going through each word piece by piece. And we'll do that with these remaining parts to it once we go through the whole list so that we have all of that. And if you missed any of the previous sessions, all of that is up on our YouTube channel. So the visual is there, and on the podcast, the audio is there. Yeah, from the ones we did before. Okay, great. To recite the tasmiyah at the beginning of every rak'ah before beginning Surah Fatiha. So you're going to say Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, like to yourself again, and then recite the Fatiha. And then to say Ameen silently, right? And there's different opinions on this too. Like you might have seen people pray, or you yourself, when you're in prayer and someone has recited the Fatiha, the first chapter of the Quran, then everyone all together out loud says Ameen. And some people say that you just say the Ameen to yourself silently. So in the Hanafi school, you say it silently. Somebody saying it differently, like, it's totally fine, you know? It's a thing that they have different opinions on. Yeah.
When you're praying by yourself, are there any prayers that you're supposed to say out loud?
If you're praying alone, you're not going to say it out loud the way, like, we are talking right now. Do you know? But you're still reciting to yourself. To the extent that if, like, somebody was standing right here next to you, they could still hear you a little bit, you know? So it's not just done kind of in your head, do you know? Like, you're still reciting it kind of at a very low, soft whisper on your tongue. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And are any supposed to be silent?
Silent, the silent and out loud is distinguished when you're praying in congregation.
Okay.
So the first, fourth and fifth prayers of the day are said out loud in that way, that like all of these things are recited out loud. And in the second and third prayer of the day, like the motions as you pronounce the takbir, the Allahu Akbar, to move from like movement to movement, those are done out loud, but the recitations are not done out loud. Right? And you think about this also, there's different reasons as to why one can understand this, but contextualize it in, you know, a time when there's like no lights and electricity and these kinds of things. So you're praying Fajr and it's really dark outside, right? You're praying Maghrib, sunset prayer, it's starting to get dark. Isha's starting to get dark. And so as these movements are kind of being seen in the daylight, Dhuhr time, Asr time, it's like as bright as it is right now, right? Versus like at other times of the day, there's a little bit more there's absence of light from like the out. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So after takbir, is it like specific for men and women on the hand placement?
It's not an obligation, right? This is what we're talking about right now. It's not an obligation. The position of it in the Hanafi school is like what we just discussed. But in other schools, the position is different. And they have bases for this. There's different evidences. For you all, what you want to take away is two things. In the Hanafi school, It's below your navel for a man and below your chest for a woman. And two, if you see somebody do it differently or somebody gets in your face, which I would apologize, right? Whether you were born into Islam, definitely if you're a convert to Islam, you're going to meet Muslims who are really annoying people. I don't know how else to tell you that. They will look at you and they will tell you things in absolutes that are not absolutes, right? So you just have to be ready for it so it doesn't like rile you up. So if you walk into a place and, you know, somebody's like everybody's got their hands like in a place and you're accustomed to doing it differently, that's okay. And you don't have to feel like you're doing something wrong. There's just different ways of doing it. And why it's also important to understand is because in your respective journeys of exploring Islam as a religion, you have, alhamdulillah, the difficulty of not having a lack of access to information, but overt access to information. You could go Google anything online and then get like a ton of different stuff back to you. This is one of the things that people are just going to do it differently, you know? And there's certain times when like it's actually helpful, right? Like there has been times when in Ramadan, it's our month of fasting. There's a recommended act that is just seclusion to the mosque in the last 10 nights of Ramadan, right? You're in a spiritual retreat. And it's amazing. And the mosques are filled with people. It's not about being away from people. It's about being away from distractions. And a lot of people will stay up late at night to pray. The first time I did this, I was 18 years old. And I was a freshman at NYU in college. And Ramadan was around Christmas time that year, right? To tell you how old I am as a person. And there was a lot of young people in the mosque doing this spiritual retreat because of the winter holidays times, you know? So doing this for like 10 nights in a row is great because you're not absorbing anything negative, right? For 10 days, no lying, nobody's yelling, nobody's cursing in your face, nobody's being mean or angry. So you're not consuming negativity. You're not watching like stuff that's going to create like visual consumption, listening to anything that's negative, but also it's just positive, right? Like people are literally cooking food for you to break your fast on. You know, people are like greeting each other with greetings of peace. You're hearing like a lot of Quran and like this kind of stuff. And so we're like waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning to pray. Sometimes we don't even go to sleep. And I was 18. I never done this in my life before. It was fun, but I got exhausted. And so I got to a point where after I'm like praying, you know, and I'm typically at my hands here, I'm like so tired. And this guy is reading so long, you know. I didn't know. I just like dropped my hands to the side and I'm just standing there like this because I didn't have any energy to put my hands up anymore. But this is a valid posture in the standing of your prayer. If you don't know that, then you could hate on yourself, like standing like this. Or if you saw somebody standing like this, which is typical in the Maliki school, right, which is one of the four main schools in Sunni Islam, and in the Jafri school, which is a Shia school of Islam, you have people who stand with their hands on the side, right? And you don't want to walk in and see somebody like that and be like, why is this guy doing this? Do you know? It's all, like, it works. Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? Okay. So, to say Ameen silently after Al-Fatiha, right? So, once it's done, Walad-Dalin, and then you'll hear in some mosques, like, everybody, Ameen, right? It's fine. It's one way people do it. In the Hanafi school, you don't do it out loud. Allah knows best. It's okay. Number 11, to recite long chapters of the Quran in the Fajr and Dhuhr prayer, medium-length chapters in Asr and Isha, and short chapters in Maghrib, right? And there's different reasons for this also, and this is just a recommendation. But when they're teaching you to lead the prayer, for example, right? You want to think, you're waking up in your house, and Fajr is at like 4 o'clock in the morning in the middle of the summer. Everybody is not in the first row of prayer right at 4 a.m. There's people who are waking up like because they're hearing the prayer started. They're coming a little bit late, right? So the person who is leading the prayer also is conscious of the people following behind them in prayer. So it's not the time to like show off in your prayer. Do you know what I mean? You come here on Fridays and people ask, well, why do you read like short chapters in the prayer? Because if you're here on Fridays, there's 800 people here. There's people with like babies. There's mothers who are trying to just not have to decide that I can't go to Jummah because my kid is going to be making too much noise or I'm going to be worried. So you're reflecting of the congregation, right? People are coming in the middle of the day, just like you go to work. They're coming from work. They're closing up shop. So the chapters are a little longer so that people can join in on the prayer. In the sunset prayer, the window of time is shorter, right? So you're not reading something that is unnecessarily long. But here, this is not, again, an obligation. So you read like what you know. And if you know shorter chapters, you read the shorter chapters. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. To lengthen the first rak'ah, the first unit of the obligatory of Fajr only, right? So same kind of idea. It's recommended, but you're extending so that people are joining in the first cycle of prayer, you know? They're able to be a part of it. If you catch like the bowing of the first cycle, then you have caught that first cycle of prayer. You don't have to like do another unit of prayer. And we're going to talk about this in more detail, right? But the person leading the prayer, they are going to also be taught how to lead the prayer in terms of like these kind of things. So as I was saying also, be mindful of like babies. There's elderly people in praying behind you, you know? Somebody's like 85 years old, 90 years old, right? I know I'm like a miserable specimen of a human being that at 18 I can't even hold my arms up for that long and I got to put them to my side. But think about like a 85 year old person who they're standing behind you. You don't need to lead a unit of prayer that's like 35 minutes long, right? Have some mercy on the poor guy, you know what I'm saying, right? Where people are like new to it, you know, like you have a community like our community that's very diverse. And there's many people who are new to prayer, new to Islam. We're not going to start them off on a marathon. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? Right?
Yeah.
So you're thinking too, like, hey, all these people are going to join in. So let's make sure we're trying to have the first one long. But if the first one's really long and that's out of kind of necessity or helping people to join in, then the second one doesn't have to be that long. Make sense? To say Subhana Rabbi al-Azim three times in the ruku'ah, the bowing position. So when you go now from the standing to the bowing, in that bowing position, this is something you're going to say in Arabic, Subhana Rabbi al-Azim, like glory be to my Rabb, my Lord. And we talked about the word Rabb a lot in terms of what it means. Like, it's not just Lord, right? But what's the definition of Rabb? That Rabb is al-Malik. He's the one that's the owner, the master of things. He's Sayyid. He's the one that is making the decisions, right? Like, I could own something. It doesn't mean I get to decide how it's used, right? My daughter, she's literally sending me pictures from home, from, like, things that they're doing on the TV. They don't own the TV. I own the TV. But they're deciding how the TV is being used. So you see the distinction between one that owns something and one that decides how it's utilized, right? Even when I go home, we're not watching anything that I want to watch, you know? It's just whatever they want to do, right? But God is both the owner and like the kind of the master, the one that decides. He's Murabbi. He's the caretaker, the nurturer, the one that's like cultivating you, right? There's a prayer in the Quran that's for your parents that says, وَقُرْ رَبِّ رَحَمْهُمَا كَمَا رَبَّيَانِي صَغِيرًا, that be merciful to them as they did nurture me and raise me when I was young. That's the same word for Rabb, like of nurturing and raising, the way a good parent like raises a child, right? And may we all be good parents to our children, And may we all have parents that are good to us as well. So that's what the Rabb means, right? Rabb means al-mun'im, the giver of blessing, right? It's the one that is the healer of all things. So when you're saying, glory be to my Rabb, you're invoking all of those things. Al-Azim means like the great. You know, so to give you an idea of what it means in terms of its magnitude of greatness, like the Quran is described as being Azim. The day of judgment, when we stand in front of God to be taken into account for our actions, that's said to be Azim. The character of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, is described as being Azim, like it's great in its capacity. And so you're calling upon God as being great in that way while you're in this bowing position. 14 of the recommended acts, you're going to hold the knees with the hands in the bowing position, spreading the fingers for the men, right? And why is this distinct from men and women? The same idea, like the men are going to go from the standing into a bowing, and it would allow for you to be able to hold your knees and grasp them in that way. For the woman who's in prayer, more of kind of a protection. And again, this isn't about validity. It's about the optimal kind of posture, right? That there are people who would say there's no difference between a man and woman's praying. But here, like if someone is a little bit more kind of constricted praying in public for her own caution and safety, and she's not bowing fully, but just to the extent that the hands are touching the knees, that's going to be a little bit harder to like do a full grasp of like one's knees in that way. Does that make sense? Yeah.
When you're like bowing, are you supposed to make like a proper L shape, or like if your back is arching but you're still like holding your knees? Is that okay?
The bowing at a minimum just is requiring you to be able to be lowered enough that you're holding your knees, right? But the optimal position is that you are like straight in the posture. And as you're going through these postures, right, the idea isn't to be like rigid, but when you're in the standing, you're in a place where you're like breathing, you know, like you're calm. And then you move from one posture to the next and you're kind of breathing. You're relaxed in that posture. You get settled into it. It's not like creating tension, right? Because you're praying. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm going to be like, have fun in your prayer, right? It's not like the idea of it as a spiritual exercise, but it's also not meant to be something that creates like inward agitation, you know? It's supposed to be a state where you have tranquility. Do you know what I'm saying? Right? And so you try to the best of your ability, but it's also an exercise. You know, like I was talking to this guy on Monday who came to the halakha we do at our apartment right now because the building closed at 8. Some of you have been there. And even when some people come and sit with us after Jummah, they take their shahada. Some of you have done this when you took your shahada here. I'm always just sitting on my knees, right? And there's some people, they just don't sit in that position, you know? So you have to be reasonable with yourself. You're getting accustomed to it. And so this poor guy on Monday is talking to me, and he's trying to sit on his knees as, like, I'm sitting on my knees. And I was like, you don't need to do this. He's like, no, I can do it. And I was like, no, man. Like, we're just sitting. There's not anything to it, you know? And then eventually he, like, leaned back and got more comfortable. And I was like, yeah, be in that position. So if you are not used to standing straight, right? And this is a challenge. Like, a lot of us are constantly sitting at a desk, right? All these things that you read that are presented to you mindlessly that you can reflect upon, where people are creating, like, hunches in their back, because they're constantly in an unhealthy way, like sedentary in ways that you're not supposed to be, you know? It's going to be literally hard to stand in certain ways. If you've never, like, gone into a bowing or prostrating position in your life, it's not like a thing that just is going to come easy, right? Just like any position. If anybody has gone through any type of, like, stretching or, you know, you've been massaged the first time ever, right? It's like you just got to get used to certain things, right? So you want to kind of give yourself also some room to build a relationship with the postures. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you're going to grasp the knees. You keep the legs straight when you are in the bowing position. So meaning like you're not like kicking your legs, right? Everything's about stillness. My kids, you know, when I pray with them, my daughter's gotten a lot better at it, mashallah. My son still, I don't even know. Sometimes we're like praying and he'll jump in to pray with us. We don't force him to pray, but he'll come and then we go down to prostrate. And after you prostrate, you're supposed to come and sit and kneel. He just stays down there for a while, right? Doesn't get up. And then sometimes he just stays standing up. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I got to get back up anyway. Like, I'm just going to meet you up here when you guys come back. I'm like, all right, man, like do what you want to do. But you're keeping your legs straight, right? So when my son, who just turned 8, he's an 8-year-old, he's not like a grown man, he's a kid, right? And he's standing, and he's trying his best, but he's like jumping around, he's like kicking his feet. Everything is about staying kind of in this kind of direction towards Mecca, you know? Your legs, your chest, like your feet, your toes, you're trying to be in that place where that element of having control over your physical body becomes a integral part to being able to then render that kind of spiritual increase. Do you know what I mean? So you're not like moving around. And then if you're praying with someone, you want to be mindful of that. So if you're praying next to somebody who's kind of like rocking in their prayer, or they're like cracking their toes while they're praying, you know, or like what's crazy is when you're standing next to someone and they start tickling your foot with their pinky toe, right? I don't know if any of you have ever experienced that. I have experienced that. It is the most awkward thing to be in a place and some grown man, you don't even know who he is tickling your foot with his foot. And it's because he's not standing in a comfortable way. He hasn't allowed for himself to be at peace in the posture, right? And you just gotta like get yourself to a place where you're comfortable with the posture, do you know? And some of that's going to come over time. So here, like you keep the legs straight in the bowing position. You keep your back flat when you're bowing, as was asked before. And you make sure that the head is level with your rear end, right? Why is this made distinct? Again, for men and women, it's not about validity, but the kind of optimal, if you're in a public space, cautiousness, etc., is that if you're bending where the minimum for the bowing is you're touching your knees, then you don't have to bend fully over, right? So if you're praying in Washington Square Park and there's all these people around you and you're just not comfortable going into that kind of mode of bowing because now everybody can see you in that position, this is the idea. Do you see what I mean? Okay. The inner sides of the arms to be away from the ribs. Here, like the idea is that you're having like separation from your body, like your body is like more open than kind of constricted and narrowed. To recite Sami Allahu liman hamida when rising from ruku'a, so from the bowing to this. The idea here in all of these like invocations is that in each movement from posture to posture, there's some type of invocation. Does that make sense? Right, so it's happening in the duration of like during this thing, do you know? If you're following somebody in prayer, you're following them in their movements. So you're not preceding them in the movement because then you're not following them. Does that make sense? So when the person leading the prayer makes this statement, as they have completed this statement, you are then going to move like in accord yourself. And people around you will have like different points when they're moving. Some will start to move as soon as they hear the person say something, right? Some will start to move as soon as they've heard the person complete something. Some might move because they see like the person has completed. And that's an important thing, like the visualization of this. Because if you're praying with 100,000 people and there's no microphone system, the people all the way in the back, they only know what's going on by seeing what's happening in the movements from the people in front of them, right? Or there's Muslims who are deaf, you know? They can't hear anything. So they're going based off of movements, as much as people are going off of hearing, because there's Muslims who are blind. You get what I'm saying, right? So this is another statement that you're going to be making. God hears the one who is praising him. When you're rising from the bowing, and you're gonna now like be in a place where the pause that's being recommended here is, so again, like, there's stillness, right? But the stillness is also so that these are seen as distinct postures. Do you get what I mean? So it's not like one just long fluid like movement, you know, but they're discernible like movements separate from each other. Like, here's a bowing and here's a standing, and it's not just like one quick like motion. Do you get what I mean? Yeah, you sure? So you're gonna stay there for a little bit, right? Like in our tradition, there's, you know, narrations that say, don't pray like a rooster, you're just pecking at the ground, going really fast, you know? Yeah, like find like some release through your prayer, like stillness in it. Yeah, go ahead.
So I have a question about that. So in order to make the first cycle or whatever cycle you're on, the minimum is to make the bowing. It's to make it to the bowing when you're joining a congregation. So in this case, is it more important to have like humility in your first stance and miss the second and miss the bowing rather than go straight into the prayer and go into the bowing? Like if I were to enter the prayer and I wanted to make this first cycle and I went straight to the bowing, and because of that I wasn't really in my first position in a proper way. Like I didn't have enough humility in my first position. Is it better that I missed the bowing to fulfill this?
No, but it's not like, even in the nature of like getting to the prayer, if you're late, if you're praying in congregation, you're not supposed to like run to it or rush yourself, right? Because to create anxiety as you're trying to build ease, like these things don't match up well, you know, right? So, you know, I'm not gonna like yell at somebody and then expect them to just be happy, right? So if you're creating agitation as you're going, you know, so you ease yourself into it. But you don't want to create like rules where there's no rules. Do you know what I mean? The intention can be super easy. You have to make an intention before you enter into the prayer. It's a devotional act. The intention can be something as simple as, my intention is the same intention as the person leading the prayer, right? And you do the takbir and you join in, and then you've joined, you know? It can take you like 4 seconds. Do you know what I mean? But hecticness is not like what the idea is. When the Prophet would tell Bilal, who was his close companion, Abyssinian man, what we know as modern day Ethiopia, he was the muezzin, the one who made the call to prayer on behalf of the Prophet when they were praying. And he would say to Bilal, like when he would ask permission to make the call to prayer, sometimes the Prophet would say to him, Arahna biha, that like bring us like comfort through this, you know, bring us ease, bring us relaxation, you know. It's not supposed to create hecticness, right? And then situationally, you want to also be able to try your best. It's like, what are you going to do? You know, if you're praying, you're the only Muslim in your office, and you're some of us, it's really easy. I can't tell you what it's like for some of you to be you, because my job is to be Muslim. And my office is here, and I have a prayer room right there, alhamdulillah. And there's like rooms where I could wash up for prayer. So, you know, and even when I'm not where I'm at, you know, I'm a little more obnoxious than most people are. So somebody says something to me, they're not going to not expect it. But you could be in an office place and you don't know how to ask somebody for a place to pray, where they might be a jerk to you and not give you what is like constitutionally your right to have. And so you might look for an empty office and you're always worried, like, who's coming behind me? That's why you want to know like all of these things too, because what the prayer might experientially be like when you're trying to find an empty classroom or in between classes or in between meetings might not be the same experientially as like when you're back at home at night, or you're like in a safe space that you're surrounded by people who kind of get and understand you. Do you see what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So you're now in this place where you're standing and you're going to recite another invocation that has some different variations to it. So this says, Allahumma Rabbana wa lakal hamd. Some people will say just Rabbana lakal hamd, and some people will say Rabbana wa lakal hamd. This is something that is also said silently, you know. You might hear some people say it loudly, but the idea again is that you're going through this and there's invocations in the various postures and as you're moving through them. 21, when making the prostration, you place the knees on the surface first, right? So in the Hanafi school, you don't go down with your hands first, you go down with your knees first. Some people go down with their hands first. There's just different ways of doing it. So in the Hanafi school, you're going to go down with your knees first on the surface, then your hands, and then lastly the face, and then lifting these parts in the reverse order. So the reverse would be the face, then the hands, and then the knees, right? So some people, when they get up, they're pushing themselves off of the ground, right? And their hands are the last things to come up, right? And others, like, are just getting themselves up straight from their legs. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question. When you're in Sajda, there's a lot of discussion on how your feet should be placed when you're in Sajda.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. Right? Yeah. But go ahead, keep going.
Yeah, I just want to know what that feet placement is.
Yeah, so when we get down, we'll talk more about the feet. Then you're going to go 22. When you're going from the prostration and rising from it, you're going to say a takbir. You place the head between the hands, 23, in the prostration. Whilst in the prostration, you're going to say this invocation, Subhana Rabbi al-A'la, the glory be to my Lord, the Most High. Right? And you want to think about this now in terms of postures, because in the bowing, what did we say? Do you remember? Subhana Rabbi al-Azim. Right? And now you're in a posture, Subhana Rabbi al-A'la. So the distinction is in the bowing, you're saying Most High, Most Great, and in the prostration, you're saying Most High. Right? But think about it from the standpoint of even the physicality of the prayer, right? When you're bowing to somebody, right? And what does that denote in terms of an actual posture towards the kind of majesty of the one you're bowing to? And when you're in prostration, it's like an ultimate sign of humility. In Islam, you're only like bowing and prostrating to God, you know? That's the only one that's worthy of that, like, sign of just respect and submission. So you're literally in prostration in not like a physically low point, right? Or sorry, not like in a humility low point. It's not degrading, right? It's a position of honor, but you're physically in where you could be at your lowest, and you're calling upon God as being the Most High. Do you see kind of like the correlation between these two things, right? So you're going to, in the prostration, you know, glory be to my Lord, the Most High. For men, you're going to be in a place where, again, there's like kind of more expansiveness, not restrictiveness. And it's different, again, not again for validity, but just kind of the optimality of the situation, that for women, it's a little more covered. But there's also the opinions that there's no difference between a man and women's prayer. So in 25, you're going to keep the stomach away from the thighs, the elbows away from the side, and forearms away from the ground, right? Meaning like your body parts are not touching the other body parts, you know? Your heels will be kept together when you're in a place of prostration. So when you're going down to prostrate, you're bringing your feet together, not spread apart. And the toes are going to also be kind of still bent in the direction, like facing the Kaaba. So you're not like, you're not laying your foot flat, but you're like resting on your toes. Does that make sense? Right? Like if anybody ever ran track when they were at any point in their life, has anybody ever done that? Track and field? You have? Yeah. So you know how you're like in a running stance? Right, and your foot is kind of arched on its toes. That's like how your foot is when you're in prayer, like in those positions. Like things are facing towards, towards like Mecca. For men, you're going to spread the left foot and raise the right foot, making the toes face towards Mecca, and the hands should be placed on the thighs. So this is when you're like in a kneeling position. We're going to also go through all these postures. I'm just going through the list right now. Right, so don't like worry about it. And you're going to, 28, raise the index finger of the right hand when saying the words La ilaha of the tashahud, and lowering it when you say illallah. So in the Hanafi school, right, what's going to happen is like that part that we talked about as being a necessary act, the tashahud, in the part that says Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, you're going to raise your finger at the La ilaha, right? So the finger is raised at the point of negation. There is nothing worthy of worship, and then it's lowered, illallah, at the point of affirmation, except Allah. Does that make sense? So it's really quick. You're going to see other people doing this thing, right? They might be waving their finger the whole time. Some people put it up at one point and don't put it down the rest of it. You know, there's different ways of doing it. It's just one finger that goes up. I think I said this last time, but my kids were like following us in prayer when they were little. They were just doing whatever we did. And then at some point they started putting like two fingers up, and then they were putting like all of them up. Words like, what are you doing, man? And they're like, you put up one, so we thought putting up all of them would be better. And I was like, that's interesting, but that's not how it goes, you know. And you can think, right, if you've ever seen my babies, who are amazing, you know, and they're super cute, and they're sitting next to me while we're praying, and they're not like normal distractions. My son will be like putting his face in my face, he's like smacking me on my rear end while I'm praying. And so it's not that he's just putting his hands up like this on his thighs. He's like coming like towards me, like going like this and that, and like magic fingers in my face. I'm like, no, man. So just one finger up. You recite, yeah, go ahead.
So I heard being that you have to have that. Do we put it in a fist or do we leave it open? Because I see some people put a fist and put it up, or some people.
Some people are gonna put it in a fist and like a clenched fist. What you're gonna do is you're gonna bring kind of your thumb to touch like your middle finger, and just raise your right hand, your right kind of pointer finger, and then you bring it back down. Yeah? Make sense? Okay. You're going to recite what's called the Durud Ibrahim after the Tashahud in the last setting of the prayer. So this is like a prayer on the Prophet Muhammad and his family, and the Prophet Abraham and his family. And then in 30, you're going to follow it by reading a dua, a supplication, using words found in the Quran or the Hadith. The dua should not be in the words of common people. So a lot of people will make a dua that says, Rabbana atina fid dunya hasana, that, oh my Lord, give to me in the world like goodness, things of beauty, wa fil akhirati hasana, and in the next world, like beauty, waqina adhab an-nar, and protect me from like the fire, right? And that's just a dua that's taken straight out of the Quran. It's a supplication from the Quran. It's not a dua that's saying after you recite on the Prophet Muhammad, like these peace and blessings on the Prophet Abraham and their family, that you're going to make a dua that says, like, give me a nice house, you know? Or I really want this job or this car. There's a time and place for that, but in this one, you're gonna explicitly do this. You're going to give your salams at the end by saying it to the right first and then to the left. 32, when saying salam for the imam to make attention for all the people, angels and the pious jinn following him, for the one praying behind him to make an intention for the imam together with the people, for the one praying alone, to make an intention of the angels only. 33, the salam of the imam and those praying behind him should be simultaneously. The late comer in salah should wait for the imam to finish his salam first and then stand up to finish the remaining. So if you missed a cycle of prayer, which we'll talk about in the coming weeks, right, you're going to wait for the person leading the prayer to give those like last salams before you stand up to finish the part of the prayer that you made. Okay, so you see this as like 34 things in it, right? In addition to like the dozen or so that go into the necessary acts, and then the six that go into the fard, the obligatory, and then the six that go into the conditions outside of the prayer, right? That's a lot of stuff, you know? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, there's some people who say, like, in between the prostrating and kind of kneeling position, you would make a prayer that says, Allahumma gfirli, Allah, like, forgive me, like you said. But it's not in the Hanafi school, like, something that you have to do. Yeah. But what most people are given when they're learning their prayer is all of this, like, all at once, you know? So even for us to just read this list together of 34 items, in addition to all the stuff that came before that we've talked about over the course of a month and a half, 2 months, right? That's a lot. So this is why you want to do it kind of section by section and then just get accustomed to it as you're going through it. A lot of it you're doing already because, or you will do because you start to follow people and you learn the mechanics and things. But you want to, like, kind of fine-tune it and make it precise. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So what I want to do is have us, like, practice a bit because it's a lot of postures today. And however people are comfortable in doing that, you can actually stand up and do it or do it in your place. Or you can just watch me do it. But so we're kind of going through the mechanics in a way that we're, like, able to visually see how that goes. Yeah. Do you have a question?
No.
No? Yeah? Okay. And then what we'll do in the remaining couple of weeks is go through these remaining portions of, like, what's left to learn in Arabic, the Thana, the Durud Ibrahim, the Dua that you make, the prayer after that in the last sitting, and that'll be, like, it in terms of, like, the Arabic parts. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does anybody have any questions on any of this? Yeah. So, again, like, you want to start with this part, the obligatory that we went through a lot, right? And in the text we were looking at, or that I recommended to people, it's on page 76, like, what it is that you're going to be going through, and work your way towards, like, this final complete, like, mode of this, you know? It's a spiritual exercise, right? So you're building a relationship with it. You have to do this in the places that we said the conditions of it were there before. The conditions, the shara'it of the prayer, you know, being in a state of ritual purity, etc. But when this fifth one, the entrance of the prayer time, like, that prayer time, you are required to pray the prayer in its prayer time. Like, you are going to do that. That's the aim. It's not that you pray it late. Somebody sleeps through a prayer, like Fajr, it's hard. You're just getting used to a new structure in your life. And we'll talk about that in the coming weeks too, like, what do you do in these scenarios? But it's not something that you're opting to just do later unless there's, like, a reason. And what are the kind of reasons? If I'm, like, a doctor performing surgery on somebody and me leaving the surgery is going to be detrimental to the life of the patient, then I can, like, delay my prayer, for example. Do you see what I mean? That's not, like, the same as what sometimes people forego their prayer for. Do you know? And so that's why, like, as you're learning it, knowing the obligations and what goes into the obligations for people who are new to Islam, they're new to, like, learning their prayer, they're getting back into it, if they were born into it, or you just became Muslim and you're trying to learn it and figure it out, you still have to pray in the window of time, but you don't have to do, like, its final form right from the beginning as you're learning it. So all these things that we just went through, those are the last bucket of things, and they're in the recommended practices of the prayer. That's not what you have to do from day one as you're learning it. You just got to do those, like, obligations and then add on the necessary acts, and then you add on the recommended acts. Does that make sense? Is everybody clear on that? Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to be mindful of the time, and I don't want to, like, delay people, especially because the building is going to close around Maghrib time. I want to give people enough time to get home. So we've gone through this list. We'll go through, like, the postures and the remaining Arabic parts next time. A couple of quick announcements. On Friday, we're going to do a kickoff event for a Latino Muslim group that we're starting at the Islamic Center. And it'll be at 6 p.m. This Friday. So if you identify as Latino or you know somebody who does, please come around for it. It's not a space that exists in many Muslim communities. Just like we have a Black Muslim Initiative, we have a converts group, we have other kind of programs that we look to create as entry points into the community. We're looking to start this for our Latino-identifying community, whether you are exploring Islam, you're a convert, you were born into a Muslim family, which there are Latino Muslims who were born into Muslim families. I had dinner last night with a friend of mine, whose name is Ismail Ocasio, and his parents, both Muslim. Someone converted at some point in his life, but he is, as a generation of Islam in his family, and his siblings, people who were born into it, and they're Latino, right? So it's an important thing to understand, like, everybody is not always a convert if they're not, like, Arab or South Asian. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? But also people are. So this Friday, 6 p.m., if you know somebody or you yourself want to come, we already have about 50 people who have RSVP'd. This will be like a good group. If you ever come to the conversations brunches that we do, we'll probably set it up like that in some way, just as a space for people to kind of talk to each other and also for us to get feedback at some point, to hear from people, like, what are you hoping to get from this group? You know, what are kind of things that we can be helpful with, you know, from the standpoint of, like, culture, language, just educational resources, these kinds of things. And our next conversations brunch will be probably in mid-September at some point, and we'll have a full calendar of, like, the coming months out in after tomorrow. We have a staff meeting, so we'll put that out. So that's for people who are exploring Islam, people who are recent converts, people who converted a while ago, as well as, like, family members, partners of people who identify in either of those categories, so they can also understand what the convert experience is like. So definitely come out to those things. And then we'll continue this class in some kind of topic going into September onwards. But how we kind of move forward, if people have feedback on it, you know, let us know. But we'll kind of continue to build off of it. Is there anything else you wanted to tell people or add?
I want to mention Alexander's.
On Monday, we're going to have a program that's part of a professional development series that we're starting at the Islamic Center. Alexander Almonte, who some of you know, he is a member of our Conversations group, and also is been really instrumental in building out a lot of professional resources for various communities, including Latino community more broadly. He did a program or a couple of programs for us in Ramadan, and people love them. So I'll be on Monday at 6 o'clock in the prayer room. If you want to come out, it'll be, and we'll advertise it later today. Yeah. Okay. All right. So we'll see everybody next week then, on Wednesday, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.